Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, welcome back. It's another episode of Simply Amazing. Tim Ryder, I am here with a very special guest. Some might call him the Renaissance Man of New York sports. Others might know him as Joe Pantorno of AM New York. Joe, it is a pleasure to have you back on the show. Happy almost opening day to you, my friend.
Happy almost opening day, Tim. I feel like I have been wandering through the desert these last 4 or 5 months, and I have not really been in the Mets podcast sphere for quite a little bit, but I will always, always make an exception for you and the amazing pod here. So very excited to be here. And as always, thank you for having me.
Oh, of course, man. Yeah, it's exciting. It's been a long, long, cold winter. It's funny after the excitement and the upside of 2023 that came crashing down, you kind of head into 2024 with these altered kind of expectations. Are you comfortable with what the team's done? Do you see the vision? I know a lot of the fan base is a little antsy, a little anxious. Do you see that? I guess where this team is going and the seeds they're trying to plant.
Yeah, and I think David Stearns has been pretty upfront about all of this, which sort of hampered expectations in the first place that they weren't going to be these, you know, swashbuckling big time buyers as they had been the last 2 or 3 winters. It would have been safe to assume upon his introduction that there would have been a hint of what he had done with the Brewers, which is maybe finding under the radar talent and sort of maximizing it to put together a playoff contender. And for the most part, he's done exactly that with the message that, you know, 2024 is going to be sort of a let's see what we got kind of year. There's a lot of youngsters still on this roster before, you know, really kind of making that World Series push in 2025 that, you know, Steve Cohen and even the previous regime of Billy Epler had, you know, first teased last season, you know, before the trade deadline, before they started dismantling everything.
All right. No, sure. And I think that, you know, in a sense, I think last offseason heading into 2023, they kind of struck with while the iron was hot. They were coming off a very, very successful 2022, at least in the win-loss column. The playoffs didn't really end up as anybody wanted. But yeah, now things are in a different direction. They've certainly changed gears. And yeah, I think patience has to be the play here, the move here. And I think that from all, you know, at least what we've seen so far, the measured approach, long-term vision. I'm a fan of everything I'm seeing so far. I guess what we're heading into 2024, I think you hit it on the nose, is going to be a lot of what do we have here as far as the foundation, as far as looking ahead to the future. And I know a couple of my questions here are focusing directly on the young guys. So I'm curious to see how, where your thoughts are on that. And yeah, I think, I know I'm excited. That's regardless of what the expectations are. But I do think this team can maybe make some waves. And with the expanded postseason, yeah, I'm optimism. I'm optimistic about 2024 and I'm optimistic about the future. So here's my first question to you. And then we're going to start with the rotation. This has been a point of much contention, consternation, whether it be fans, whether it be talking heads. In this rotation, of course, the question was originally with Senga, but now without Senga, at least for now, for the foreseeable future, can this rotation compete, considering that it's relying on depth, considering that it's relying on upside and what we've seen from the, I guess this rotation so far in camp? Like, is this a group that can kind of withstand the pressures of facing the major leagues for 30 starts apiece, hopefully, knock on wood?
I think, and this might be erring toward the side of that, you know, annual optimism that comes every spring, but I do think that the Mets could probably surprise a few people. You know, speaking of the rotation, I mean, kind of what we saw from Sean Manaea yesterday against the Yankees, you know, his sweeper looked pretty devastating and his changeup had Juan Soto kind of questioning life there for a few minutes. you know, but Luis Severino had a really strong spring and, you know, Tyler McGill had a pretty strong showing. And I don't want to come out and say, you know, this is going to be the second best rotation in the National League East, because, you know, we just don't, there are too many question marks, and that's kind of what was built here. This is a rotation that David Stern sort of built on the upside. So technically, I mean, if you want to label it as low risk, high reward, you can certainly do that. But, you know, there has been a track record of success for some of these arms, and it's just a matter of finding that consistency. And obviously Mets fans have seen sort of the maddening splits of Tyler McGill from, you know, the spring and how his play sort of descends into the summer, and, you know, that American sport could perhaps be the difference maker. You know, Manaea seems to have figured it out ever since working his way back from the Giants bullpen late last season. Obviously, you know, you have to hope that Luis Severino stays healthy and that his pitch tipping issues are sort of in the rear view here. But again, this was a, you know, two-time top 10 AL Cy Young Award finalist. So it's, you'd like to think the pieces are there. You know, what you get with Adrian Hauser is what you always get. You're going to get a number five starter that's going to average a 4 ERA, maybe a little higher. And really that's okay. So, you know, if one or two of these guys sort of exceed expectations and can maybe hold things down before Kodai Senga comes back, I think the Mets will feel pretty good about where they're going. And also they do sort of have this luxury of having Jose Buto, who had a sub one ERA this spring, kind of hanging out in the minors right now. And, a lot of young arms too, whether it's, you know, Christian Scott or Mike Vasil. So I think in years past, we've spoken about the depth that the Mets might have with their pitchers, but I think for the first time in a while, there's actual legitimate depth here and not just sort of saying it's there. And then when the time comes, it's not, and it disappears.
Yeah, I know. It still almost has that like patchwork quilty quality to it, yeah. Where, you know, if you're looking at it on paper, yeah, you're looking at maybe a couple of guys with ceilings of two, couple of guys with that are probably, you know, back end, probably fives on most rotations, probably looking at, you know, a full house, three threes and two fives. But, you know, the upside, you're looking at possibly a two in Severino. And again, when Senga comes back, and if he's healthy and he's still producing, he's an ace level guy. But for right now, you can't count on him. If Severino can be a two, if Manaea can be a solid three, if Quintana can be a solid two and do it from the left side, and then you have Hauser and McGill who are just holding down the back end and doing so well, you know, that could play. And this is, again, this is glass half full type stuff, but it could play. Whether the production stands up, whether the health stands up, again, having Buto and Lucchese back there is great. Having some good young arms back there is great. I'm not as concerned as most on the staff, but I can certainly see where the concern lies with people who aren't maybe as, who may be taking a pessimistic look at things. But I guess that's what they play 162 for. I'm looking forward to it. I think that this group could be serviceable. I think that's where I'm standing now as we head into the season. I guess we'll see how it shakes out. Question two. The addition of J.D. Martinez, of course, was huge, kind of changes the entire dynamic of this offense. Does it make this Mets lineup a postseason caliber offense?
That's tricky. As silly as it sounds, I'm going to make it contingent on a couple of things. And I think the first thing is Starling Marte, the kind of Starling Marte that the Mets get back. Because I'm a firm believer, and I might be in the minority here. A healthy Starling Marte, or as close to a 100% Starling Marte as there can be, he should have the first crack at the number two spot in the lineup, because I think we all saw what he could do 2 years ago in that spot, how he was an engine in the lineup, and how the Mets really sort of struggled down the stretch without him, and how they were out of sorts a lot last year. And I know a lot of the onus falls on the lack of finding a legitimate DH during that stretch, and understandably so. But if you have a healthy Starling Marte and then have an opportunity to maybe shift everybody down one, so say Francisco Lindor goes to three, Pete Alonso goes to four, then all of a sudden you have J.D. Martinez batting fifth. And, you know, you don't have to, again, he's 36 years old, and we're all very aware of the regression that a lot of aging hitters have when they do come to the Mets. You know, it's just, it seems to be a tale as old as time with this team. But you don't need to have the, you know, 33 home run, 100 plus RBI version of J.D. Martinez. You could be close. You know, if he can come in and give you 25 plus, that's huge. That's something that the Mets haven't had from the DH spot since, you know, it was introduced to the National League. So I do think that if that order can kind of click and you have a top five of that, then undoubtedly, this is a playoff caliber offense. And then you have, you know, you can flirt with Jeff McNeil, you know, a former batting champion now being pretty healthy and working past the biceps and the elbow issues, you know, potentially batting sixth. And you'd like to think that Francisco Alvarez will find a little bit more consistency in his game. And then you think that maybe Brett Beatty can take a step forward again. So it you know, the top five would sort of take care of itself. And then again, if you get steps forward from the bottom three, four guys, you could assume that this team could potentially cook a little bit offensively.
Yeah, no, a lot of things got to break the right way. And that seems to kind of be the case with this 2024 Mets going into the year, is that, you know, if things break the right way, sure, this could be a moderately successful season, depending on how some dice roll. The addition of J.D. Martinez, to me, and this is beyond the how the lineup fits around him, the protection that he offers, how things fit around him, just what he brings to the table is what really has, I guess, had me really over the moon about the signing. I mean, in addition to, you know, I guess $12 million total with four and a half this season, the rest deferred, which is, you know, outstanding. You're buying into the vision. Let's try and make this work. We love that. But the leadership skills, I think Pete Alonso was speaking very highly of his baseball IQ and his hitting IQ, and you know, all of that stuff is just, it's, and it's not to say that this Mets locker room was missing that, but another veteran voice, another proven veteran voice who comes in there and just, without even saying anything, can probably command a certain level of respect just from his experience. That, I think, means the world, especially when you're looking at a young roster, which, you know, when Vientos is going to be back, you have to assume he will be back. But I think he's going to be directly a benefactor of Martinez being around, even if they're spending time together in Syracuse for 10 days. I think that's going to be something that's going to ripple effect into at least a higher level of potential success for Vientos. But that's just an example. I love what Martinez is going to bring. I love what he does to fastballs. He's a bit, all or nothing on breaking balls. Last year, he was, 45.2% whiff on breaking balls, but he had a slugging percentage of .603 on well breaking pitches. So, he's certainly still that guy. And, the same could be said about anybody. There's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be cat and mouse with, opposing pitchers. And of course, that process is just, in hyperdrive now because of all the video data and scouting. You have to adjust on the fly. And I think that Martinez is the perfect guy, not only to do that, but to set an example for the rest of the club, who we've seen Pete get into, terrible, terrible slumps because pitchers are adjusting to him and it takes him a minute to adjust back. And that's just baseball. But I think Martinez here is going to be such a plus for him. I'm really looking forward to that. Leading into the kids, and I know you spoke a little bit about him. How do you see 2024 shaking out for Francisco Alvarez, for Brett Beatty, for Mark Vientos, who now has a bit of a speed bump ahead of him? Like, I think everyone's kind of looking for progress. I think the Mets organization themselves are looking to see what they have in these guys. You've seen what they've provided on the field. You've had the experiences of seeing how they're acclimating to major league life off the field. What's your take? Do you think there are major league caliber futures for, specifically these three guys, your Alvarez, your Beatty, your Mark Vientos?
I will say that of the three, I think Francisco Alvarez has the highest ceiling of the trio, which, I think a lot of people would agree with, especially just the steps his defensive game has taken. We saw that he was an elite framer last year. If I'm not mistaken, it was like in the 95th percentile.
You can check that.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. don't quote me on that yet. We saw his arm kind of really take a step forward in spring.
95th percentile, my man. That's outstanding.
Wow. Yeah. pretty good. All right. I'll take that. I think that his defensive game and his commitment to really working on that, going back to two off seasons ago when he was doing work with, Yadier Molina, you're picking the brains of the defensive greats, really kind of shows that he wants to not only be a top tier slugging catcher, which, let's be honest, in the major leagues, that's a little easier to do compared to being a defensive catcher, but he wants to really be elite on both sides of the ball. When he's hot, he's unstoppable. And we saw it a little bit this spring too. And then he kind of had a lull and he, sort of floated back down to earth and, he ended spring with a .205 batting average. So I kind of think that's what you're going to get again, but it's just this year is about limiting those down stretches where maybe instead of slumping for an entire month, because his splits really did kind of have like an every other month change in direction. Instead of, really slumping for an entire month, you're limiting it to 2 weeks and sort of limiting the damage where you can. As for the others, Mark Vientos, you can say that he maybe hasn't had the most fair shake because his playing time at the major league level has been incredibly sporadic. And we saw what he can do down the stretch last season with a little bit of consistent playing time. He had a good spring. You hit five home runs in 19 games. The power is there to potentially be a DH option down the road. That goes without saying. His defense was a little shaky. He struck out 19 times in 56 at bats. That's pretty, a pretty notable number there. So I, you know, I don't know if it's going to be here for him, you know, a lengthy MLB career, if it's going to be for him in Queens. And, you know, JD Martinez even sort of referenced that himself when he talked to the media about, you know, his conversation with Vientos, how sometimes, you know, the best move or the best thing that could happen to you is, you know, coming back, and it might not be in Queens, it might be somewhere else. But, you know, again, there are some intangibles there. It's just there always seems to kind of be a block at every turn for him, which, again, it's hard to do. You know, it's hard to kind of find your footing when you're getting 20, 30 game spurts and then you're getting sent back down or you're getting benched or whatever it might be. So, you know, he's 24. You know, he's still plenty young. So maybe the organization is hoping that, like you sort of alluded to, that JD Martinez can be sort of that tutor, and that guiding presence that can maybe help him take the next step in his professional career. And for Brett Beatty, I mean, I think the franchise is still kind of gung-ho about him, and it certainly made their decision easier with Ronnie Mauricio's injury. I still think he has a lot to prove, obviously on both sides of the baseball here. But I think there's a reason why, again, David Stern sort of, you know, quelled any rumors that the Mets would go out and get somebody like a Justin Turner, for example, because they really want to see what Beatty can do here. And again, you know, if you play him a full season and if he can bat you maybe close to, you know, 250 with high teens, low 20s home runs, then, you know, maybe it's something that would compel Stearns to keep him around, you know, for another year or two. But again, I, you know, I think Beatty has a lot to show all of us. So I guess that's the way I would prescribe it. Again, it's a lot of hypotheticals here, but yeah, I guess that's how I'll put it.
No, but I think what you said is absolutely true. And it's all up to hypotheticals. Cause at this point, I mean, only the players themselves and what they do with their opportunity is going to tell us the end of the story. I think we're on the same page on Alvarez. Absolutely. I think his upside is all-star caliber. His mechanics, and you were talking about his defense and his framing, throwing out runners. And I've been looking because I noticed when he came up, I believe it was his first stint coming up, he anticipates the throw, receiving the pitch before he throws. His whole body is turned as he's receiving the pitch. He's ready to go. He's like a cannon. You know, you look around and you only see a very, very minority of major league catchers actually have that sort of footwork and athleticism to do that in such a split second reaction. He's just unbelievable to me. We know his bat. I think his bat's going to get there. You know, major league catchers aren't high average guys. Maybe you have one or two guys. If Alvarez can give you value on both ends, you've kind of hit gold. If he can give you above average on both ends, oh, forget about it. You're cruising. Beatty, I think that bat's going to play. I really do. I think you mentioned 250 with, you know, in the high teens, 20 early, low 20 home runs. I think with experience, I think with confidence, I think that would be his low end. And I might be overshooting that, but I love his swing. I love his bat. I love the way he's progressed. Did they let him sit in the majors for a little too long last year while major league pitching just ate him up? Yeah, maybe. But hey, you go through the fire, you come back stronger. And I think that he's going to be a prime candidate to come back stronger. I'm looking forward to what he does. Excuse me. Mark Vientos. And I was saying this with Martino Puccio, who's a soccer guy for Peacock. He's also a huge Mets fan. Mark Vientos is a very much a one-dimensional guy. And I think this isn't a knock on Mark. That's just his game. He's a power hitter. Jarrett Seidler from Baseball Prospectus has been pretty much tooting that horn for years. Like, yeah, can he be a productive power hitter? Sure. Is he going to be a 3-4-5 tool guy? Most likely not. If he can add value with that one dimension, though, one, you have to see what you got. And if he's not the guy, then yeah, you pivot. But in my, you know, if a trade's not on the table, I would love to see how Vientos responds to all of this. I want to see if he goes to Syracuse and thumps. I want to see if he makes his way back to the majors and shows, yeah, you know what? I have warts, but I could still hang. In a perfect world, I'd love to see that play out. We'll see if the Nets take that route. But yeah, that's an intriguing storyline to me, is what Vientos does with a little bit of adversity. Oh my goodness, we've moved ahead on the clock here. My goodness, we got to move it up. Okay, yo, can this bullpen be as solid, or at least as effective, as it looks like it could be on paper? And again, there's warts. There's more depth than flashy names, but it looks solid. And it looks like this might be one of the more solid areas of this roster. Could this be a strength for the Mets?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I think, you know, maybe a month into the offseason or 2 months into the offseason, that wasn't really the case. And it was, you know, kind of getting to that time where I was like, okay, well, what are they going to do with the bullpen? I mean, really, just, I really don't need to say it, but having Edwin Diaz back already makes them a better bullpen than they were last year. It doesn't even matter what pieces were underneath, underneath him on the depth chart. Doesn't matter. He's obviously, you know, the best closer in the game when healthy, as we saw 2 years ago. And I think just kind of his presence allows other guys to sort of fit in here, where maybe Adam Ottavino is going to have a bounce back season where he isn't in the highest of leverage situations because there's no Edwin Diaz. And, you know, I think this franchise, this feels like Drew Smith's last chance. But then again, I think we said that last year. It felt like Drew Smith's last chance, but here he is again. Same thing. Can he be a earlier inning sort of relief guy that could, you know, give you a sixth or seventh inning if necessary? Brooks Raley's was a shutdown left-handed option last year. I think he was their most valuable bullpen piece.
Once he came back, he was amazing.
Yeah. Especially after David Robertson had, you know, left at the trade deadline. So, again, Jorge Lopez, you don't know what you're going to get out of him. I like the Michael Tonkin signing, same thing. Kind of that's, you know, earlier portion depth, which would be good. I mean, the same thing with Johan Ramirez. And again, kind of feels like a last chance thing for Sean Reed Foley as well. But then again, these are guys who you don't have to worry about them getting the highest of leverage opportunities, which would give Carlos Mendoza the opportunity to sort of feel his way through the regular season. And it's not, you know, every single move he makes is dire, where he's entering the eighth inning and it's, oh, I'm out of relievers. He doesn't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
I'm still a little intrigued to see what Shintaro Fujinami could do. I was always kind of high on his stuff, even though it was a disaster last season and it didn't necessarily play great in the spring either. I'd like to see what some extended time within David Stearns' regime could do for him and, you know, the Mets pitching lab, if they could optimize his stuff. But yeah, there are a lot of intriguing pieces here to complement a little, you know, the proven guys, the stalwarts of the group per se.
Oh, 100%. And I have double X factors in Jorge Lopez and Fujinami. I think these guys, I'm not going to say they can make or break this bullpen, but if those two can find any semblance of their ceilings, their high points as relief pitchers, man, this bullpen, I think, could be in very, very good shape. I like Tonkin. I love the depth that he brings. He can go multiple innings. I believe it was Austin Riley's Rakes. He's a terrific Braves fan on the app that they formerly known as Twitter. But turn me on to Tonkin. You know, this is a guy who goes multiple innings, reminds me very much of what Lugo could do when the Mets refused to put him in the rotation. Just if you need him, he's there. He can give you two or three. And usually, you know, one and a half times through the order, he can be effective. And that's a huge plus. But man, between Lopez and Fujinami, man, I think those guys could be real, real X factors in this bullpen. And really hold things down to an unexpected level if things go well. But I think that's kind of the theme. And that's, you know, that's par for the course for March. But if things go well, but I guess we'll see. We already kind of touched on McNeil and Marte. I'm going to jump to Pete. Pete's had, I don't want to say ups and downs, because he's one of the premier power hitters in baseball. We've seen him when everything is clicking and it's all cylinders and his average is up closer to the 250 area and he's still hitting and he's going to all fields. He's got a lot more kind of on his plate this season, not just, you know, wants to continue on his path, but off the field, he's got, you know, his contract, free agency possibly looming, contracts, you know, in the papers somewhat consistently, or at least contract thoughts and stuff. But do you foresee him being the guy that we know him as to be? Yeah, you know, he's going to have his ups and downs, as any ball player does, but seemingly unaffected by his environment, just goes out there and goes to work. Are you expecting that same Pete Alonso in that respect?
I would think so. And I mean, when we, down the stretch last season, when, you know, everything was sort of lost and this line of questioning started cropping up with him, he always had that sort of steady approach to it. And that's what prompted David Stearns to say that he had no worries about Alonso performing with this contract situation sort of looming over his head. This guy's a student of the game. You know, I think we all know about his notebook now that he sort of keeps, and he, you know, keeps his gospel in a way. And, you know, last year that slump he had over the summer was kind of an anomaly, I would say, where it's, you know, that's one of the things where you look back and that might happen once or twice in his career and not necessarily once a season. So I personally don't have any doubt that he, you know, can't go out there and, you know, hit 40 plus home runs again, especially when he's potentially surrounded and protected in the lineup by, you know, Francisco Lindor and JD Martinez on either side of him.
Yeah, no, I think he's in I don't want to say a better position, because, you know, each year that he's been here has been a much largely different lineup, different kind of, I guess, construction of the lineup, where, you know, maybe Pete does need that protection and maybe we'll see that, you know, I guess, come to fruition, or at least say, oh, hey, yeah, maybe this was a better idea. Maybe the Mets should have got a real DH a long time ago. You know, nothing against like Mark Canha, but maybe Mark Canha hitting behind Pete Alonso wasn't good for Pete Alonso, which, you know, I guess the players got to work through that. But with that luxury kind of being presented to him now, where, yeah, you're going to see more strikes because look who's behind you, yeah, that could be huge. And it could kind of shift how the Mets look at the rest of his career, the rest of their moves, if he's still here. You know, oh, wow, okay, so we know that Pete does well with a premier power hitter, a premier hitter behind him. Okay, so let's maybe take a deeper look at Juan Soto next offseason. Let's, you know, let's look at a star type guy who would fit behind Pete in the 4 or 5, whatever it is. You know, there's plenty of options, but again, these are all butterfly effects. This has to happen and this has to happen. And we got 162 games to figure it all out. I cannot wait.
Yeah, it's I can't believe it's here already. but yeah, I mean, that's a whole other animal. You mentioned the dreaded Juan Soto rumors. So that'll be another fun aspect to sort of watch throughout all this. And I'm sure those, you know, screams will only intensify if the Mets don't get off to the best of starts. But I will probably share David Stearns's outlook that this should be a team that is very much in the thick of the playoff race. You know, when we get down to the nitty gritty in late September.
How is it possible that you just answered my last question without me asking it?
Oh boy.
That's pretty good. No, hey, we're almost out of time. So that was actually excellent. Not bad.
If I'll go a little bit deeper and I'll say that the Mets go 84 and 78 and they sneak in.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll take that. It's a tough division. You know, a couple of hot runs, a hot run towards the end. You don't know where that thing might take you. So, yeah, get into the wild card, get into the dance and make some waves. That's all we can hope for at this point. You know, at the end of the year, there's going to be 29 teams who don't get the chips. So, you know, hopefully the Mets are in the dance. Try to get one. That's all I could ask for. Joe Pantorno. Dude, I can't thank you enough for coming back on the show. I cannot tip my cap considerably enough for the work that you're doing over at AMNY. I mean, all sports. I saw you on a Red Bulls podcast last week. I mean, man, really, just you're killing it out there. Congratulations and continued success.
I appreciate that, Tim. Thank you for letting me come on and blow some hot air on your show for a little while. And I look forward to talking more Mets baseball with you throughout the season. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. We'll have to have you back. Maybe a little like a quarter post check-in.
Works for me.
All right, buddy. All right, everybody. We'll see you on a more frequent basis. I promise we are back to baseball season. Woo! You know the sign off. It's LFGM. We'll see you next time. Peace.